Feel like you're stuck in career limbo? Clock in, clock out, repeat. No growth, no new opportunities. It's time to break out and break into tech. With CBT Nuggets, you can start building the IT skills that companies are hiring for right now. We make training fast, simple, and practical. From networking to cybersecurity, you'll get short, easy-to-watch videos and hands-on virtual labs so you can build real-world skills without expensive gear or complicated setups. For just $59 a month, you get unlimited access to our full training library. That includes certifications, skill-based learning, and practice exams, a $100 value included free. Learn anytime, anywhere, and get job ready on your terms. Thousands have used CBT Nuggets to launch new careers, and you can too. Right now, CBT Nuggets is offering a free trial. Easily find the training you need and test it out with no commitment. Start your 7-day free trial now at cbtnuggets.com. Don't wait. A better job is just a few clicks away.
What's up?
Good to see you. Congratulations.
TV. Thank you. Yeah, it's been crazy. I don't know. Somebody just donated $3,000 right before the last interview. So it's people are going crazy. Wow. I'm super excited about that. But
I was thinking what I could offer in terms of trying to debase myself for more money to come in, and I got a glass of soy and a gauntlet of hot sauces of
whoa.
Preceding levels of pain, and if you alert me to moments in history where things are coming in, I can slowly start consuming them with a thing of chips that I also have before me for the internet's pleasure. So,
oh hell yeah, you're the first guest to do that, and I appreciate that so much. And I think they are going to start donating to see him suffer, right, guys? Right. I think that was one of their favorite sufferings was when I did the hot chip challenge live.
And, you did it.
It was, yeah. I thought I was going to actually have to call emergency services, but I live in America, so I didn't. But I didn't end up throwing up, and that would have been where I knew what I needed to call it, because, like, you know, going down, it was horrible, but going back up, it would have been even worse. But it's true.
I was going to say, I don't think people can do that one anymore. I think they banned it because someone died from the spice.
Yeah. Dude?
Yeah, I think the...
Did I commit a crime on live stream?
Look that up. I can't remember. Hot chip kills...
Oh my God. September 1st, 2023. Harris Wolbath, a 10th grader. Yeah, he died.
He died from the heat?
He had a heart defect, but, like, they didn't know, so he just straight up died.
Yeah, I think that's why the hot chip challenge is no more. So you're one of the last to know what that's like.
Hey, yeah, I'm special, a survivor, I guess. That's R.I.P. man. Shout out.
Well, I mean,
if
you already got 3,000, I could start this thing. I've got a a hot sauce that has absolutely no spice and no power. It's on the low end of things. This is called Handmade Hot Sauce by Marty Makes, and it's very tame, so I'm gonna spill juice all over myself, but that's not the first time that's happened. But I'll try and keep it on camera so people know I'm not faking. Oh God, yeah, it's all over my clothes, but here you are. I'll start.
You gotta lay out a wow. Hot chip challenge.
There you go. Delicious.
He's going to die.
Painless.
Nice.
I'm sure I start. Things are going really well. I mean, all things considered, I think since we last spoke, I haven't talked to you in, I think, 2 years when I brought you on to my stream, and you have blown to meteoric success since then. So massive congrats on that as well. Yeah, things. It's one of those things where I don't know if there's a word for it yet. I haven't determined it. A word for feeling both profound, intense frustration and sadness all the time, but then simultaneously hating myself for feeling sad or angry when life is so comparatively cozy. So I don't know if there's like a German word for that, for the simultaneous anger, depression, sadness mixed with you shouldn't feel that way because turn your camera off and go outside and things are fine. So whatever.
Is there a German word specifically? Is that why you reference that? Is it like
well, I'm just asking if there is, because I don't know a word in English for that particular sensation. But
it's like a trap kind of almost of cyclical thinking. I mean, it's a trap unique to people who care about the world and want to make it better. And knowing that the world is bad and needs to be improved means that I'm not going to feel good a lot of times. So, but then comparatively, like you're saying, like that's the shitty part. You gotta how do you manage that? Like,
you manage
it a lot.
I get sad. I don't have a good answer. I think I watch the Noah Sampson charity stream and I feel the more faith in humanity. So that's obviously a really awesome, happy thing that's taking place in spite of everything. I honestly don't know at this point. I'm personally getting to this moment in history where you feel like you've kind of tried to do everything within the bounds of what you're supposed to do. Like I'm going to protests on a weekly basis. I do have good news. We got I worked on the campaign for a local communist to get elected on my city council, and we won. And he's on our city council here in Vancouver, Canada. And he's already wearing a keffiyeh in city council meetings. He just extended our public library hours permanently. So one piece of good news I could tell people is localized organizing for local small elections. No one thinks about, but you can get leftists elected at a much faster rate. Our turnout for our local election, I think, is something like 35%, and our by-elections were like 17. And he beat everybody. He beat every corporate candidate because he was literally a dishwasher. That was his full-time job. His name's Sean Orr. He was a dishwasher, and he worked with the tenants' union. He worked with a bunch of other localized unions, and he just basically won on a campaign of eliminating billionaires. And there was enough people pissed off in Vancouver, which is not a super left-wing city, to be like, yeah, we're tired of having a council run by cops. So that's one piece of good news that's happened recently.
That's awesome. Did you do a lot of social media work or coverage of his election and campaign stuff?
Yeah, I made a bunch of videos. I made his official campaign ad, which broadcast, on the internet and stuff. And
nice.
I worked with the team to canvas and stuff like that. I'll be honest with you. It's one of those things where when you're feeling really helpless and frustrated, you always see this thing. And it's kind of like an adage now. You should organize locally. You should do that, right? It's actually true. It's one of those things like, you know, how people tell you exercise and eating well is good for you. It actually is. It does feel nice to be surrounded by other people who are just as frustrated as you and feel just as helpless, and then you get to work together to try and have a good outcome. So that was a piece of
It's like you got that figured out, but it's still super easy to let it creep back in when that happens. But then you go on Twitter and see what's happening in Gaza, right, or something like that, where I mean. How do you, what's the right question? How can we consistently be reminded that that kind of change is possible and that it, circling back to it is one of the good ways to keep from not acting, or inaction. And I guess, I'm going to add to that, like what you're talking about. I talked to somebody recently that the concept of like suffering and stress and depression from watching what's happening, keeping you from advocating for the people that are being harmed is a form of like kind of liberalism and individualism, where even though you want to be able to take care of yourself so you can do things, it's also But you want to be able to take care of yourself and not be too hard on yourself. But also, yeah, like you're saying, getting out and doing something, that's required of like a leftist or of someone that wants to make change, you know?
Yeah, I think it's by design that a lot of what you see and the saturation of it that gets portrayed in the media defeats you. Because that's certainly a feeling of, like I said, helplessness that is really hard to overcome. I'll be honest, for me, I'm more perplexed and confused by people who have seen what's happening and still want to put their fingers in their ears. That to me actually sometimes like damages me more than the idea that, you know, somehow people are just unaware, because that's usually what I think, right? I was like, that's got to be what's going on. If you happen to be like up here in Canada, a liberal or a Democrat in the United States who is still doing this kind of like, well, you know, we believe in Israel's right to defend itself and we stand proudly against terrorism, and you just keep regurgitating the same seven talking points over and over and over again. Part of me is just sitting there wondering, have you seen it? Right? Like, and if you have, that's even more profoundly grotesque to me, or sick, that you can disassociate so much. Like, I just said, the level of dehumanization sometimes it's effectively poison people's brains.
A question I keep asking is like, yeah, like you're saying, do they know and don't care, or do they just not know? And like, if they don't know, is that our social media echo chambers that powerful to where anyone that's following people on like Instagram, if people start posting videos from Gaza on the ground in Gaza, do they just unfollow them, or like, do they just not get any at all? Like, surely enough of this has been shown at least by one person in their life that they are aware, but they don't want to look into it any further because they just don't care, or like Western programming or what. And I think either way, the result is basically the same. But only one of those groups of people can be reached, which is by, you know, they're not seeing it actually somehow and showing them with, you know, by talking about it online. I guess that's the sort of silver lining, but it's still just to imagine someone seeing that. And obviously, you know, people advocate for more of it too. That's kind of the more like, oh, that person's like a Zionist, they're genocidal, whatever. But the people who see it and just don't care, that is the frustrating. That is like, I don't know. Do you get, I guess, where does the line get drawn between someone that can be sort of persuaded or educated about something to where they might want to, you know, take action about it? Versus someone that it's like a lost cause, mm-hmm. If that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that makes total sense. You know how post 9/11, you might be younger than me, so I don't know if you lived through this period, but there was this time when the idea of 9/11 trutherism kept exploding and becoming bigger and bigger until it all almost mainstreamed with like Loose Change and documentaries like that. And I was thinking the same thing at that time, which is that how can so many people collectively believe a delusion when it's just like a very strange thing to have to change the way your entire worldview works? I think a lot of people now are experiencing that with neoliberal global hegemony and world order. And I think to a lot of people, it's more comfortable to want to resort back to the idea that the West is noble, the West should be the world's police, the West, and in all their endeavors, whether it be geopolitical or trying to conquer other lands, are doing so benevolently to maintain control, because if not for them, we'll have radical extremists take over the planet or something. I think for people to now realize that comes at an incredible cost, which is blood, right? And has forever. I mean, has in our entire lifetimes, but maybe they didn't know, right? Like, I have indigenous relatives and friends who have said that, like, you are all talking about how fascism's arriving in America, and do you know that, like, you know, there's a lot of bands in Canada that live under it every day, that we've been living under what we feel is an oppressive fascistic government, or we feel that we've been living under, you know, some kind of really intense oppressive force. So I think for some people that hopefully this is, or has been at the very least, a moment to question all that. I'd say that's possibly the bare minimum, to look at why are products so cheap? in America? Why can I buy, you know, a PlayStation for $500? What does it take to get all the parts excavated, first mined in the Congo, then assembled in a plant in Thailand, and then brought over to Vietnam, and then brought to my house? All the energy and time and labor and power, and I get it for a price that makes me able to consume it and enjoy it. That actually does come at an incredible cost globally. I just never thought of it as a kid. I just wanted a Nintendo, and then a Super Nintendo, and then a GameCube, and so on, right? So, I mean, I'm hoping at this point this is something where people start to question the idea of having a permanent, as it's told to us, democracy in the Middle East is necessary for global stability, and that we should be funding and fueling it no matter what the cost, because we have to stop the ultimate evil, which is terrorism. You know, then that's what we got to do. I hope that at least one or two people, at least, and I mean, I'm saying this both because I'm experiencing it, right? I don't know about you, but like normie family members are sending me Instagram stories. Like, you know, hey, Lance, did you hear that apparently there's no food being allowed into Gaza? Yeah, I have. I have to look at pictures of it every morning for work and cry before I can start streaming. So, yeah, it's bad, right? Yeah, it looks really bad. I didn't know things were so rough there. Well, let's do something about it. let's stop. I don't know. My government's complicit. Your government's complicit. Most governments, you know, in the West are, to some extent. Please don't be fooled by thinking Canada's one of the good countries because, you know, we put a one-way arms embargo. We're still selling weapons to Israel. We just sell weapons to the U.S. instead, who sell them to Israel. That was our loophole. And so we get to pat ourselves on the back of being, like, the good libs once again up here in Canada, because we found ourselves a loophole that makes us sleep at night.
Yeah. I do see a tide turning in coverage among people I know, among people I wouldn't have expected to talk about things like this, but it's weird because, like we were talking about earlier, about people that know about it and don't care, but also the compelling aspect of deconstructing Zionism is that when you really understand, when you understand the history about what happened, about what they plan to do, how they did it, and how they're still doing it, and they're trying to finish the job right now, and when you understand what's happened, every single incursion previously into Gaza in the last 25 years and further, this stuff gets kind of there's a certain moral clarity to it. And it doesn't even really require that. Like that's ideal, obviously, but all it takes, like you're saying, is just like seeing a photo of, you know, the results of an IDF bomb on an apartment complex, just seeing one image of, hold on a sec. I think the stream died. Give me one second.
Oh, no. It's still running on my end, by the way.
Yeah. Got it. Okay. Yeah, I think it's just the OBS or something on YouTube.
Well, I can entertain people by eating another chip while they wait.
Yeah. Hello, chat. Can you hear us? We're back, it says. That's weird. That's the first time I've had that happen, which is... Honestly, I'll take that. It's pretty far into the stream. Okay, cool. What was I saying? Just that, I guess. I'll have like reservations about sharing a lot of footage because at times it feels like exploitative, or you know, some people use the phrase torture porn, where it's like, what's the utility in sharing these things consistently when most of the people that follow you are also seeing it. And I think that's a valid question to ask, but also a lot of the people that follow you are seeing it all the time, and therefore that rule may apply, but there's people that don't see it. And I guess it bridging the gap between your feed and your following count and people that are uninitiated or are not seeing things consistently. Bridging that gap means, oh, people will see a footage and just say like, oh yeah, that's objectively horrible. Why is this happening? Like, let's look into this a little bit more. And then, you know, the picture becomes clear, and propaganda that's used to sustain Israel, it's unsustainable. Like, it's unsustainable. We've seen that over the last 2 years. More people are talking about it. More people are thinking about it and reading about it. And, you know, it's an inevitable conclusion of a project like this, which is a sense of, you know, does bring a sense of like a hopefulness to it, but you know, at what cost, right? At a, you know, the completion of a full scale genocide in front of our eyes. It's like, you know, are we were kind of too late, but there's only one thing we can do, which is, you know, I guess with social media, like you do you stream every day or like how, what are you,
usually like Monday to Thursdays. And then I work the other days on video essays and stuff like that.
Yeah. How are the videos going? Video essays?
They're good. I don't, it feels odd talking about some of the silly garbage and slop that I cover compared to something as serious as this. It's a bit of a change. I just did a video on the right's hatred of Bill Burr right now, for, you know, basically talking consistently about how we shouldn't have billionaires and stuff like that. I find juggling that is complex as well, right? Because I did a video basically talking about the history of Jimmy Fallon and what a terrible piece of shit he is, when in the scheme of things, I mean, the guy's not literally a war criminal. I did frame the whole thing around him and DJ Khaled effectively eating Maklube, which is the national dish of Palestine, on their show without acknowledging that it's a Palestinian dish, or even talking about the, you know, the ongoing genocide that's taking place and how weird that was and how ghostly it is to kind of see that. Actually, you know what? I think that might be an interesting way to relate back to what you were saying, is that you were talking about how there's a paradigm shift, or at least it feels a little bit like one sometimes, and how things could be changing. I am noticing that almost daily via analyzing the media. I found that, like, I don't know about you, but like the same cycles just aren't working like they used to. I used, like, you know, even recently there was that shooting, I think in DC, or I'm not entirely sure where it took place, but I knew when it happened that the next morning I'm going to see every single world leader make a statement, which they did, and I'm going to see, you know,
every anti-Semitism.
Yes, and every news network talk about this topic nonstop, and that this is, I mean, I think the ADL was blaming Hassan for it, and other people are blaming the Palestinian movement for it, and all this kind of stuff. And I was thinking to myself, well, obviously this is going to be yet another easy talking point that can be just used consistently to vilify anyone speaking out against genocide. But I was surprised to see online, or at least in commentary or on social media, it didn't matter what comment section I was looking at, like Instagram, TikTok, you name it, it was flooded with people being like, Israel killed 86 people today, 29 starved. There's pictures of the two people who, pictures of people who starved, and there's pictures of the people who were burnt and bombed. There's not a single statement about that. The day before, it was 127. The day before that, it was 200 and something. And I on and on. You could constantly talk. I don't see a single world leader bringing that up. I don't see anyone condemning violence against citizens. I don't, until things get so bad that you have like a UN official saying that there's going to be the mass starvation of babies, we have to do something. And then and only then you get the cowardly kind of Macron, Carney letter that came out, which was like, we agree with Israel's right to defend itself and we condemn the attacks on October 7th, but this is going too far and we would like you all to please stop it, and we won't do anything about it. We're not gonna stop selling you bombs. we're not gonna stop giving you aid. We're not gonna sanction you. We're not even gonna go as far as doing diplomatic ties, cutting those off. We're not gonna do anything but stop it, please. And now you can just, it's just one of those things where I'm like, this is being positioned to set it up in the history books, right? So that when everyone is against this, which they will be, they're like, make no mistake, in you know, 20 years, whatever it takes, everyone will pretend that they were always against this, like they do for every tragedy from, you know, the Iraq war, the illegal invasion onward. Everyone loves to, in hindsight, you know, oh, I was always against that. Yeah, I wrote a strongly worded letter. Did you read it? It's strong. It has words and there, so don't point the finger at me.
That has to be the most infuriating thing, is the liberals about it, all the liberalism of it all, like the I think one of the worst ones for me was the rubbing it in everyone's faces when Trump says stuff about Gaza that people should have voted for Kamala. And they still do that. And like the, like, I don't know, the AI video from of Trump Tower being built on the shore in Gaza, just repulsive. Like, that's, I guess, more of a social media thing, but it's the same kind of, you know, theoretical, immaterial critique of this system that we is so deeply ingrained in everything that we do that, and despite this, people are, I guess, holding up the Democratic Party as some, I mean, just, it's irrational, right? Looking at what actually happened, what they actually did, you can't, that's not a tenable position to hold. But people are so beholden to this, I guess, liberal framework of liberal hegemony that they'll act irrational in this way, to the point where, you know, I don't know, you had people quote tweeting Palestinians that were saying, fuck Kamala Harris, and saying, you know, you deserve a good, have fun getting genocided by Trump. Cause like, we're, you know, they'll turn Gaza into a parking lot. It's like, bro, it's already it's worse than a parking lot, right? It's there's people underneath it as well. And I don't know. That's another space of feeling that I think is good to explore, is like just anger outside of despair, like rage. And I think that can, that it provides an ample motivation a lot of times to, especially when it comes to like propaganda or moral justifications of what's happening. Anger can take you a lot of way, like a long way. And even if it's maybe not coming from like a pure morality politics or like a completely rational, logical approach to the situation, it doesn't really matter, as long as you know what's right and you're fighting for what's right and you know that genocide is wrong, which sounds like that should be self-evident, but clearly it's not. That's a feeling you can harness, but like, yeah, a lot of times it's still, when you see it, it's just like, God damn, man, what the fuck are these people doing? Why is this allowed? Why is this allowed to happen?
Yeah, I especially hate the idea of giving people credit in advance for things they haven't done. Because I saw it's happening now for Trump, where I'm seeing all these people being like, he's actually at odds with Netanyahu. They are frenemies. They're mad, and he's got strong words for him. And it's like, the guy's talking about openly turning it into a casino resort. Like, he is not a friend of liberation movements. But they did the exact same fucking thing with Joe Biden. Like, every other week, it was, Joe Biden's very upset. Here's a clip of him in Air Force One saying, next time, aim properly. Joe Biden's very upset. Rafah is the red line. He's, no bombs shall be sold post-Rafah. And tanks are rolling in. And it's like, so we're
working tirelessly for a ceasefire.
Every day, yeah. And not actually, you know, doing anything material to stop it, because... I think it would feel maybe less absolutely batshit if it wasn't the fact that like they are the primary military material supplier to the war machine in Israel. So
brazen.
I know. Like, you cannot think of a more direct parallel and line that connects the two, right? Like, I know causation doesn't equal correlate, but no. In this case, it absolutely does. Like, if you don't want the bombs that are made in plants in Michigan to drop on babies' faces, don't sell them the bombs. Don't ship them the ball. It's just that easy. And it always was. That was the most frustrating thing, I think, during that election cycle, trying to tell everyone who, like, I heard from so many libs, there's nothing he can do. What can he do? He's but a meek little small bean Biden. You know, he has no real powers. He can't do any given day. He can pick up the fucking phone and stop this. Like, I'm serious. He could even pause it. He could pause the shipments of the bombs and the weapons and the arms and the funding. You could pause it and then start negotiating, or use that as leverage, or use that as a tactic. You're just giving a war criminal everything he needs to do war crimes. And then afterwards acting sad when it's like, well, it's really upsetting what is taking place there that you are doing. I don't...
Right.
Yeah.
How did that, I guess, Gaza, from your perspective, figure into the election, both the presidential and then, I mean, the recent election that was for the city council? Because it sounds like, what's the guy's name?
Sean Orr.
Sean Orr?
Yeah, Orr with two R's, but like an Orr that you paddle with. So Sean Orr.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah, so in that election, how much did that get brought up? Because I know that's like... Hey, Mario Cafia, that's, I've never heard of that from a city council member, but also, yeah, I'm curious, like, what that conversation was.
That's that. Okay, so I actually have a good story there, in that we banded together to get Sean elected onto the council at a time where our city council in Vancouver is run by police. They're run by ex-cops. They're run by the police union. They're run by police affiliates. So we have a cop-run city that promised 100 new police and 100 new nurses. And I'll let you guess which of the two promises they followed through on. And all of our money now is being funneled into the VPD. So that was obviously really upsetting to everybody. Our mayor, his name is Ken Sim. He built a private gym in our city our council meeting room. He's trying to change a lot of our currency reserves into cryptocurrency. He's a crypto bro. So things are really bad. We got the Sean election. They never saw it coming. They never saw him as a threat. They never thought he would be elected, let alone get 1,000 votes. He got more votes than any other candidate in the by-election by a monstrously huge margin. I think it was like 52,000, and then the next was like 17 or something like that. It was after he got elected that every mainstream outlet here started running stories on him. They just didn't do it before because I don't think they genuinely thought he was a problem. It was the next day they went through social media and was like, here's a clip of him posting some ban that says all pigs must die. That's a clear call to violence. He's a violent extremist. The week after, there was a story running about how he was anti-Semitic because he had, he had called out anti-Semitism. Someone was making an anti-Semitic statement, and then he made fun of them by saying, oh, what do you think, like a cabal runs the city or something like that? But they used that clip of him making fun of an anti-Semitic conspiracy theory to say that he, in fact, is anti-Semitic because he himself had posted that. So it was the next day that we saw the full force of what basically local mainstream and corporate media were willing to do to like tarnish his image. I'm happy to say he hasn't backed down yet. But it is also kind of sad because you have to look at this from a, you know how every day we have like, in the U.S. you got a lot of really cool, badass lefty politicians who are coming up right now, right? Like Kat and Zoran in New York, for example, and they're decidedly anti-genocide, they're pro-worker, they're anti-billionaire, all this kind of stuff, right? But every now and then, you got to play the game, they got to make a statement, they got to put out a thing, and then everyone gets extremely sad, and you get that feeling where, is it the machine itself that destroys anyone good that comes into the system? We haven't experienced that yet, but I figure there will be, in the near future, a moment where, Sean will have to make some statement politically that'll have a lot of the very far left upset at him.
Yeah, recently the backlash to what Zoran said when asked about, Israel's right to exist or to self-defense. I don't remember which one it was, but that was a thing that he got a lot of backlash about, and understandably so. I happen to agree with, that's kind of a rhetorical trap, and it's like, it's unfortunate to see people fall into that. My wonder is how it's possible that, the, I guess, genuine, or I don't know what the word is, like principled anti-Zionist politics can be communicated to someone like Zoran when he fucks up in this way, or when he says something like that, or when, when a statement is made by, I guess, it may not be the great example because they're not politicians, but like NECAP, for example, when they come out and condemn resistance, probably to try and make sure they don't get arrested for, terrorist material support to terrorism.
I was like, it didn't work. The statement didn't work. One of the guys just got arrested for terrorism. Charged for terrorism.
It doesn't. And it's that kind of capitulation, like, you understand where it comes from, but it never will, especially as the days go by and as the, lashing out of the Israeli lobby and the Israeli state and its supporters becomes more violent and, they're backed into a corner. But then, yeah, my wonder is like, because there's Twitter lefties and then there's someone like Zoran where there's somewhere in the middle that something has to be done about, there's Twitter lefties and among them there's a principled subset of people that are trying to genuinely influence someone like that's voice in a positive way. But also it sucks to say like, take what you can get. And it sucks to imagine that if you were to like, I haven't seen any of his follow-up statements, so I don't know like what that actually would look like. But I guess, yeah, a question would be like, how is there a is there a valuable connection from people on social media to politicians like that that can actually enact positive change, or can a communication can be facilitated by it? Because, you know, again, Sauron's kind of alone in the sense of, you know, politically being, you know, true, like an anti-Zionist. And so that support has to come from elsewhere, it feels like.
Yeah, I think it's probably a two-part thing, right? I think the first part is that ultimately we're not going to ever find salvation in the form of a single election or candidate, which is just the reality. I think in terms of leftist organizing, it has to be from the ground on up. And I think that my personal belief with local elections stems from the fact that I think they've always been an untapped area. And I work with a guy, Kyle, who's in the DSA, who helped get Shama Sawant elected and then reelected in Seattle. And she's the reason that Seattle has the $15 minimum wage and protection against landlords who want to evict you improperly. And at that time, it was like, no one shows up to local elections. No one concentrates them. We're all focused on federal elections and the sexy ones, you know, the president, the prime minister. And so it gets all the TV coverage, and that's all anyone thinks about. And then you feel somewhat powerless. So that's why I've always said local organizing that's why I wanted to work on Sean's campaign and help, because I was like, I bet we could, if, you know, we push this and I have a little bit of a platform, but I can still use it to try and go after the baddies locally. We can get someone elected. But you're right when it comes to, you know, how do you get people to realize? Because, like, I'm assuming, I don't know what's going on in Zoran's mind, but I'm assuming that probably came from a place of trying to be as non-unelectable as possible, or as non-toxic as a candidate as possible, right? Because, like, people will call you anti-Semitic for a watermelon pin now. So, you know, yeah, I think he's basically just trying to do what's the standard torchbearer method here going in. I think at this stage, things are so fucked that we need to combat the most typical talking points. Israel's right to defend itself. No one has a right to genocide. That's my response right there. I believe in a two-state solution. How can you have a two-state solution when one state isn't recognized and doesn't have food or water? Because immediately, that's the reality of the situation. Canada doesn't formally recognize Palestine. The U.S. doesn't either. They don't have diplomatic channels directly with Palestine as a recognized independent state. They could do that at any time. They don't, for obvious reasons. The conversation frames it, like, the point of those rhetorical tricks, and you called them for what they are, is to put you in an instant position where you have to defend something that is indefensible. Like, what, do you not support the idea of Israel having a right to exist? Why? Is that because you hate Israel, or is that because you hate Jewish people? What's wrong with that? And it's like, the way you framed this immediately puts me in a situation where I'm supposed to ignore what Israel is doing and ignore the oppression of Palestinians because I have to sit here and think now. And like, oh, well, I guess every state has a right to exist, even though that's not a thing. We don't say that about any other country. States don't have a right to exist. They simply do. And then they can be recognized or not recognized under international law. I mean, this is all made up shit. Lines, borders, countries. I mean, these are all things that we invented as people, right? Like, you know, there's not a sacred land that separates Seattle from British Columbia, and as soon as you cross it, you've entered a different planet. I guess that would be my response to those. That I think there needs to be very solidified points at this stage, because I think it's like people asking you to condemn Hamas, right? I mean, that just shuts the conversation down. Piers Morgan won't even speak to Jeremy Corbyn unless he's done it. Like, I want to hear you say it. Do you condemn Hamas? Right. Well. Do you condemn Israel? do you condemn what's taking place right now? I mean, we can sit here and do rhetorical games all day. That doesn't. All that serves is it stops us from being able to actually talk about what's happening.
Yeah, I feel like that question, condemning Hamas, it was shortly after October 7th that Norm Finkelstein went on to Piers Morgan. I'm not sure if you've seen that interview, but he drew like a historical allegory to, you know, the Nat Turner slave rebellion to say, you know, violence in service of a greater cause at that time was not condemned by the abolitionists because, you know, you can acknowledge that atrocities and crimes occurred while also understanding that the resistance itself cannot be condemned because the resistance itself spawns from a place of necessity. from subjugation for the entirety of Israel's existence. And like, how can you have it? It takes, I guess, skill or a capability to maintain firm when people are asked that question. Do you condemn Hamas? To say like, well, it's actually maybe going to make me unelectable, but I don't condemn resistance to genocide. You can condemn atrocities, but in times of like moral quandary, it takes certain voices to stand firm and say, you know, say something that could potentially have consequences. And it's the same thing with, I guess, like when The Intercept and the Electronic Intifada started, like, uncovered the Hamas mass rapes hoax, the narrative about, you know, October 7th, screams without words in New York Times. That is a very difficult thing to challenge for people, especially in the West, especially liberals, especially people that are, you know, not only attuned to a humanistic worldview of hearing about sexual violence and being rightfully concerned about it, but also ingrained with all the racist beliefs that come with the idea of, you know, the barbaric Arabs climbing over the fence to, you know, kill and rape. Unearthing that was a super risky thing, a super, like, seemingly, you know, a difficult thing and a brave thing to do. But in times like that, that's, I guess, where those voices are so important to have. And those voices are important to have to immediately respond in turn and immediately respond in a way that's, I guess, morally consistent, historically informed, and on time. Like, it needs to happen now. And like, yeah, I guess I understand the frustration from people when they see politicians who are ostensibly pro-Palestine react this way, because it seeds the conversation to a place that it shouldn't have to, regardless of the political, you know, bounds of where you're trying to get elected. But you can't, like, I guess, ignore those things. But I think that there's a way to challenge these narratives without being unprincipled. But when they push you on TV to try and get you to say it, you know, it's a hard. I understand why it's difficult to do. I'm curious if, like, in the process of your local election, because you said they were trying to smear this guy and
to be fair, attack smear him with, after he was elected.
After he was elected, oh, okay.
Yeah, because they just thought he was
retroactive.
Just a communist dishwasher that no one's ever going to vote for. They didn't think that we would have organized in the way we did.
Mm. Sorry, one sec. Getting you.
Yeah.
How what did that organization look like in terms of, like, what were the ways you went about it? How did you did some of the media for the campaign, right?
I was doing the media.
How did the internet facilitate that? Like, to what extent, just baseline, what was the campaign like? If you don't mind going into it.
He had a really good message. I think that was just similar to how Bernie Sanders reached a lot of people. I think if he was spending all day campaigning and talking about very, very hyper specific issues, the average person probably wouldn't have been paying attention. But the messaging mm-hmm. was usually very, very direct, just that wealth inequality is higher now than it's ever been. We have a very small amount of billionaires, like Chip Wilson, the guy who invented Lululemon, who basically funds a lot of the right in Vancouver and a lot of police and police union endeavors. Everything that they are doing is, you know, effectively making your lives harder, your lives worse, and they want to distract us by turning us against one another. He's like, his plan was that there are more renters than there are landlords in Vancouver, and he was 100% right in that. He's like,
feel like you're stuck in career limbo? Clock in, clock out, repeat. No growth, no new opportunities. It's time to break out and break into tech. With CBT Nuggets, you can start building the IT skills that companies are hiring for right now. We make training fast, simple, and practical. From networking to cybersecurity, you'll get short, easy-to-watch videos and hands-on virtual labs so you can build real-world skills without expensive gear or complicated setups. For just $59 a month, you get unlimited access to our full training library. That includes certifications, skill-based learning, and practice exams, a $100 value included free. Learn anytime, anywhere, and get job ready on your terms. Thousands have used CBT Nuggets to launch new careers, and you can too. Right now, CBT Nuggets is offering a free trial. Easily find the training you need and test it out with no commitment. Start your 7-day free trial now at cbtnuggets.com. Don't wait. A better job is just a few clicks away.
Literally thousands of people who rent. There's hundreds of people who own those apartment complexes. So if we can reach the thousands of renters rather than reaching the pushback that'll come from the very, very rich and deeply entrenched pockets of the billionaire class, people will wake up, and they did. And also, you know, it helps that, like, there's a band called Wolf Parade that started promoting them, and then some other bands started promoting them, and then it just became more of a kind of like a grassroots thing, because I think it was one of those things that also got a lot of people excited, because you're watching a lot of the world burn and a lot of elections fall to far right authoritarianism. This one actually felt fun. Where everyone was like, let's see if we can get a commie elected onto our city council. And then it was like I said, it was only afterwards that they actually went through all of his social media. Because I was telling, I actually, you know, to my discredit, I told the team, the Progressive Electors Coalition, I thought he was too extreme. I was the asshole who was like, I think his social, I said he was too badass. I was like, he's too real. His social media accounts have been, you know, very, very vocal and loud. And I think that they're going to destroy him based on just like going through social media and taking a look at that. But I was dead wrong. They didn't care. They didn't think he was a threat. And then after he got elected, all these news articles started coming out saying, hey, look at what he posted. You know, look at this band that he likes, All Pigs Must Die. He's got to be super evil or something like that. I don't know. It's one of those things where I don't think it necessarily has to be a local election. I think if you genuinely are feeling sad or hopeless, getting organized in any organization locally is a good idea. It could be an LGBTQ plus organization. It could be a union, form a union for the first time in your company, whatever it is. But when you start actually sitting down and you're surrounded by other people who feel the same things you do, you feel a lot less lonely.
Yeah, definitely. Have you been feeling that much on, I guess, between creators, like a collaboration or seeing what's happening online? And like I think that's probably why we spoke originally, was talking about like BreadTube, LeftTube. So yeah, I'm curious where the state of that is in your mind.
What even is BreadTube anymore?
I'd hate to bring it back up, you know, but I gotta do a check-in. That's, I guess, I'm the guy for that. Unfortunately, I have placed myself in that position.
I think after October 7th, in many ways, I have never been more disappointed by the complete lack of some of the biggest names in BreadTube and their abject silence. That to me was shocking, because part of me kind of felt that if we had gotten to a point where there was some leftist content creators who got famous and in some cases rich, but that's, you know, not their fault. It's just the amount of people who want to donate to their Patreons. But there's people who got famous enough to have the biggest platforms. I am quite astonished that I have yet to see a single mainstream video by a lot of them outside of you, Sean, a couple others, and that's it. Then there's obviously, like, you know, some people who have tagged or put elements of that into their work or put a video or two, but I can't think of a more defining moment of our time as we're going through this on every scale, right? Like, Jesus Christ, go to a university and go film a TikTok with the student protesters. Go deliver them some water. Go to a protest yourself and see what it's all about. Go interview, a journalist who is fearing for their lives and they're going to die. See, I don't know anything. I think, you know what, honestly, one of the things that your latest video or two videos ago did, the one where you're rightfully calling out a whole bunch of genocide apologia, was that it normalized talking about this, in the sense that, like, I think not a lot of people had ever thought that liberal Zionism was bad, too. I think a lot of people think that, like, well, right-wingers, fascists, Nazis, neo-reactionaries, all those kind of people on the far right, yeah, they're terrible, they're deplorable, we can call them out, right? But I was like, it's almost more insidious to have people who are still allowing for genocide to take place specifically because they regurgitate what is the safest position. Like, yeah, peace is great. Sounds awesome. Like, you know, people who are like, I would like a two-state solution and there to be peace in the Middle East. Cool story, bro. Is there anything happening right now to prevent that, that you want to talk about? No, you want to keep this? And I mean, I shouldn't just single out lefties online, although with lefties, it feels this is something that they should already be in touch with, but just content creators in general on the internet. I don't know if you saw, like, I feel like everyone has had that video where it's just like, all my fans are always saying I have to speak up about what's happening in Gaza. I don't know. I don't know anything about
it. I'm an
this.
Idiot. I'm yeah. stupid baby. Yeah. Yeah.
I do mukbang for a living. What the fuck are you supposed to get me to say about this? I don't care. I have no skin in the game. I've got no, like, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, no one's asking you to, you know, do from the river to the sea and then start, you know, a charity stream or anything like that. But then maybe this could be that moment that you want to learn about it or something else. Or you know, I mean, if the world's largest internet children's entertainer can have more bravery than most politicians, what does that say about you? Right? Did you want to be on the record in 20 years as having contributed nothing more than an angry video where you got mad at people asking you to speak up about something? You know, it'd be one thing if you were like, every day someone's like, why don't you talk about Sudan? Why don't you talk about Syria? Why don't you talk about, like, and then in that case, it's like, well, I think you should, but I understand that's not your lane. Fine. Fair enough. This is a case in which you probably in one way or another don't know it, but you could be invested in this somehow. Is your bank invested in the Israel war machine? Is the companies you work for? Is the sponsor that you have promoting them? I don't know, but I think it's not unreasonable for your fans to simply say, hey, can you just post a free Palestine or watermelon or a charity stream link or something?
Yeah, and I mean, even in an ideal world, like that desire for education being sparked in people, as you mentioned, like, can take people further and further into the points where it's, you know, it's not only, it's not so breaking from the brand of your work to at least bring something like that up in the under the auspices of the type of content that you already make, like incorporating that into it. Because yeah, I don't know. It's kind of like, I don't know if what a good phrase for it would be, like the sunk cost fallacy or like false idols of like, are we just e-celebs that might use politics to make money, or are we trying to do something good? And I think it's a spectrum for, you know, it's a broad spectrum of thought. And I think a lot of the people that I like watching and a lot of people that like cover this stuff and have helpful educational perspectives on it definitely lean more towards the just like trying to improve the world. And if you are successful at that with content, then that's a great thing. And a lot of people take that success and use it for good. But also, you know, there's a barrier when your material interests as a social media creator, as that being your job, does restrict you from, or not restrict you. It does restrict us in our minds, and it shouldn't. And we should be able to, if we are principled, push past that restriction to, at the very least, advocate and post like, I don't know. Ideally, it's not just posting basic stuff, but it's just being a part of a collective conversation, because I don't know, it doesn't take much to just get people on the same page about what's happening. I shouldn't say that, because it does take a lot when it comes to like fighting off pro-Israel propaganda, right? That's the whole thing about it, is you can't talk about solutions and what we should be doing when we don't agree on what's actually happening right now. And when there's a concerted effort to obfuscate or lie about what's actually happening right now, it becomes even more difficult. But I guess it feels like a failure in what could have been the opportunity that could have been to, you know, not just make a steady stream of content about it, but organize together to do things that are helpful and beneficial. And there's been some, like, I think Hassan, Sean, a few other people have done charity streams that have raised hundreds of thousands of dollars. I think a million for some of them. Hold on a sec. Stream died.
Are you getting taken down? I feel there.
I don't. Yeah, I don't, I think we're back now, but we're back. Okay. It did that earlier. It gave me a notification that stream died, but then it reconnected. I have a 150-foot Ethernet cable running from my PC to my modem because I just moved and the Wi-Fi wasn't working, and my cat thankfully hasn't chewed on the cable yet, but I figured at some point it would start fucking up. But I think we're back. But anyways, yeah, it's like it's that feeling of like a failure almost, and like, you know, okay, we can maybe learn from this experience to try and do more stuff, but in the future. But all, with this issue, it's too late, and it's kind of tragic. And I mean, I include myself in that space of creators, because yeah, I mean, I wasn't talking about it every video. I was talking about it, you know, not nearly as often as I should have, and I was not, you know, I was not organizing any of these things. So I don't point to other people and say that they failed. I'm like, we all kind of failed, and that's
humanity failed.
That's a sad reality to reckon with, you know.
Yeah,
not calling you a failure.
No, I'd accept it. I feel that every day. Well, that goes back to that original thing I was trying to explain to you, that you kind of wrestle with this thing, right? Where I've got this routine where I go up in the morning before I cover the news. I'll look up all the stories, and then I'll have to look at you know, pictures of mutilated children. Usually, to a certain degree, you try to build a a thickness to it, but it breaks me all the time. So, you know, I'll cry before doing whatever I have to do, and then I feel guilty for that afterwards, because I'm like, before I have to turn on an LED light and a webcam and stream for a living in the most privileged and blessed position possible, right? It's that weird kind of after effect. Like, who the fuck are you to feel? You're not experiencing this. You're experiencing a parasocial version with this, which you're seeing a Holocaust on your phone. But that's it, right? So don't act too affected and get out there, slugger, kind of thing. And I think that's that to the point in one of your videos. It's not a bad thing to try and weave this into whatever you can. Like, I was watching the interview with you and Al Haddad the other day, where I think one of your questions was, what can you do? And he said, anything, right? Like, anything you can. Is your thing, you know, protesting? Is it telling people? Is it convincing a single family member? Whatever it is, whatever you can do, do it, right? That kind of attitude. I think that makes a lot of sense in terms of, like, you know, I am a slop merchant at the end of the day, in that I create content for a living, and some of it might be good or noble, some of it might be trash fire. Hopefully it's more noble than trash fire, but there's nothing wrong with thinking that, like, hey, I mean, people on the other end are doing this. People on the you know, the center right to right wing anti Hassan, anti Noah brigades are churning this into 24/7 drama slop, right? Occasionally being like, and I just want to preface by saying that I don't take sides on the actual issue behind the video, but like a brave, you know, centrist, I'm going to say that war is bad and peace is good, and that I hope everyone stops hurting each other. Thank you. But there's nothing wrong with in the middle that making a video where you're like, I know more people are going to watch this if I put Mudahar and Destiny on the thumbnail, and they're going to watch this because they're interested in drama. And sure, here's a couple crumbs for all of you to consume. And now that you're here, here's 40 minutes of what's actually happening. And just so you don't walk away with this, because, you know, if this people are hate watching me or whatever it is, I hope that they at least can acknowledge, or their audiences can, maybe. That's probably the bigger thing. You're never going to convince Asmongold not to, you know, call you a slur or something like that. But you might get 100 people who are watching him live to suddenly be like, wait, that's what's happening? Like, that's how bad it is? I didn't know that, right?
Yeah. I wonder... I guess the most effective ways to do things, how can we be effective? Because this is all uncharted territory, right? This is the first time in my lifetime, in any lifetime, that a live stream genocide has occurred, and people have been at the same time in the same platforms that content, I mean, it is technically content, videos and footage of that genocide are being posted. People are talking about, you know, anime titties being too small or whatever. And that's a crazy situation to have happen. But I don't know. It's like a, you know, we're working within the current constraints of this medium. And if we can find new and innovative ways to do that and get more people to do that and show people that there's examples that this actually works and this actually might have some effect of pulling people, you know, you don't expect to pull everyone by any means, but at least showing people that there's another story and more important things going on and at least piquing their interest. I think the majority of viewers of a lot of these communities that are already entrenched aren't like reachable necessarily, but it feels shitty and insane to be like, we got to Mr. Beastify anti-genocide content, but that kind of is, you know, a part of it is being able to produce successful and mass appealing media, not even necessarily mass appealing, but mass audience capturing. And I don't know, it's less targeted certainly than, you know, direct media or propaganda for a political party or political movement. But I guess it doesn't mean it's not important. It doesn't, you know, we don't know where that will end up or what effect it'll have in the future. And in that vein, I guess you were doing media for an actual campaign. Do you feel any difference in the effect or the intent going into making something that's more targeted like that versus either left content you've made online about, you know, whatever right wing influencer or other left content you see from people?
Yeah, definitely. I think we're in enemy territory. Anytime we post videos to YouTube, to Google, or to any of the other platforms that you're on or stream on Twitch, effectively, if you've got an anti-capitalist message or an anti-imperial message, I should say, more importantly, because that seems to be what the media is far more aligned with. It's just kind of like the imperial aims of the U.S. at all times. If you're putting stuff out there that's against that, you are going to be, you know, running uphill with weights on your back, because they're going to do everything to try and drown that out, especially when it comes to this topic. I think I saw the other day that in Canadian media, it's almost like a 300-to-1 ratio of times that Israel is covered versus times that Palestine is covered or mentioned, and it was actually the way anti-Semitism is portrayed versus Islamophobia. It's just a jarring difference in those two things. So I think when you're working on a localized campaign for someone you believe in, and you're working with people who are actually inspired and feel like change is possible, the whole thing kind of feels like a fairy tale at first, and feels kind of like we don't have a shot in fucking hell, but let's go down swinging, or let's just try. And then when we actually got better numbers than any other candidate in the election, and then the dude is in our council wearing a keffiyeh now, it's to a point where I'm kind of like, what next, right? That's kind of the way you feel afterwards. You're like, shit, we can do that. We can organize together. We can do something like this, and we can beat the actually deeply entrenched corporate candidates that were in our riding that had the backing of Lulu fucking Lemon, you know. But that didn't matter, because there are more renters than there are landlords. There are more workers than there are CEOs. You know, by the millions. And everything, I think, sometimes is to make you forget that. I know that sounds very broad, but I think sometimes just the monotony of spend all day pushing up against the right going after trans kids, spend all day going after the right going after immigrants, spend all day going after the right going after black people and making up lies about how they're more prone to criminality or how indigenous people are more prone to addiction or whatever they're spewing, whatever weird Nazi shit they're saying on any given day. It makes you forget at the end of the day that, because billionaires feel so fucking powerful sometimes, right? Even Mark Zuckerberg, like, you know, that's the kind of person that I would not consider to be an intimidating person, you know, if I was to meet him face to face. But it feels like he controls the world. It feels, you know, like, you know, Bill Gates has more power than I'll ever have. And that feeling, I think, leads you to complacency. Whereas doing something like this, or just being reminded that there are way more workers than there are capitalist bosses, I think that is important.
Is there any thing you would recommend to a viewer or someone that might not be politically engaged that can get their foot in the door, or that can show them that positive change is possible. Like when you're talking about seeing the positive change happen in action, that's a very, that's a crucial thing, to see some tangible improvement in front of you that will then motivate further improvements, right? So I'm curious if you have anything on that vein, or if you talk about that often with your audience or in videos, and how you go about doing that.
Yeah, I've got a whole video that kind of broke down our strategy to try and share it with other people so they can replicate it and do the same thing. And, you know, a lot of what we did was emulating what the DSA was doing in Seattle. So, you know, shout out to them and Shama Sawant for getting stuff done on that end. It's the same advice I was saying earlier, though. It's to get involved in some local org, and because I know some people could be watching this in you know, Alabama or Mississippi or somewhere where they just don't have leftist organizing, and then, you know, but like, it doesn't necessarily have to be like, you know, the Communist Collective or something like that. It could be Food Not Bombs. It could be a local LGBTQ plus org that you didn't know existed, but you just Googled it and found it, and then there's six of you, right? But you have way more power if there's six of you together against people who want to go after queer folk than you would have if, you know, you were just on the internet and doom scrolling 24/7. Because that's the other thing, is I think people need to realize that every one of these social media platforms, even the good ones like Blue Sky, their algorithms are highly trained to make us all fight each other and be mad, because that keeps us engaged, because that keeps us looking at it longer, and that keeps us interacting. So if you post something and it's something that it knows I will disagree with, it will show me the thing that you posted so that I get mad at you, and I immediately be like, what the fuck is Noah smoking? This is so wrong. I can't believe he said this. Because they know that I'm going to generate more content for them and keep them on the site. And you can feel so hopeless if you're on the internet for a long period of time, or if you're addicted to it like me. I don't know if you exclude yourself from the terminally online, but I certainly do have terminally online brain rot, and I sit there sometimes feeling completely helpless, even though I have a giant platform on the Nazi app. You know, I've got like hundreds of thousands of followers on Twitter. Cool story, bro. It doesn't change the fact that I'm like, I'm going like this, and I'm just like, humanity's fucked. It's because there's a guy on the other end who's making money from me feeling humanity's fucked. In that case, it happens to be Elon Musk, but that's the benefit to them, by keeping you feeling helpless. I lost those feelings instantaneously when I was sitting in a room surrounded by actual humans, and all of us were like, how are we going to beat Cop City? How are we going to beat the police? Because they have all the power, they have all the money, they have all the resources, and they can shoot us. But how do we beat a billionaire-backed police force government that we have? What can we do? And it felt wonderful.
How did that conversation play out? How did those conversations happen? I've never been in a political organizing room, really, if that's what it'd be called.
Well, first we all had to pledge fealty to Karl Marx, you know, yep. and then drink blood the worm. Oath. Yeah, the blood oath was first, and then we drink the worm, and then after, you know, the elevation ceremony. It's basically a mix of people in mostly, you know, in their late 20s to mid 30s, who in my local org here, the organization is called COPE, C-O-P-E, unfortunate name, but the slogan is
COPE.
The slogan is make billionaires.
That's awesome.
COPE. So it's not as sad as it
That's
sounds.
Good.
Yeah. Just sitting in a room, genuinely strategizing, and everyone bringing, eventually, this is the cool thing, everyone eventually brings to the table their best skill set and start bringing that up. And for me, it was like, I have a social media reach. I can make and edit videos. I can make ads. I can do propaganda. I want to be a propagandist for good. Give me the ads. And so that was my thing. Someone else is like, I'm a part of three tenant unions. I work in this district, and I can band together with other tenant unions, and I can get literally close to, you know, 10,000 people on board of this, simply if you can promise that you are not going to give landlords more power. And that's what I can do. You know, next person, something else, next person, something else. And then eventually you all start developing a strategy from there.
That's what I wonder, is how we can tap into that same like diversity of skills and interests online. Like in our audiences, there's hundreds of thousands of people. all of whom have their own unique skills and interests and ways that they could contribute to this thing that I feel like I don't see that often, and maybe I'm just not paying attention or looking in the right places. But I know, aside from like a Discord, maybe in terms of like group organizing, maybe there's examples that I'm just completely uneducated about. But I mean, in your audience, I'm sure you have thousands of people doing all sorts of different amazing things that would be willing to put in, you know, ideally you want to pay people for work, but would be willing to want to, you know, help organize like political action, whether that's, you know, art or social media use, or I mean everything down to basic use of I don't know, borrowing a truck in someone's city so you can do a campaign fence, what is it called? I don't even know shit about anything, but you know, this tapping into this like pool of resources that people who would, you know, be down to help, basically. I feel like there's a lot of them.
Yeah, I should probably retract what I said a little bit, not retracted, but just corrected that. I don't think that all of BreadTube has like fallen apart. I don't even know what BreadTube is. Like, for anyone who's wondering, BreadTube's a subreddit. It's just a subreddit that, like, you know, people who are left aligned are called BreadTubers usually. But I used to be the guy because, you know, my own channel got taken down off YouTube and people banded together to help me. I used to be the one where I prioritized platforming everybody, you know, like bringing on smaller creators. I used to have a thing where at the end of my channels, I would make an ad where I would be like, hey, if you want me to promote your small leftist channel or TikTok or song or company or union, email me, and I put it in the video for free. And for a couple of years, I was doing that. And then I got to a point where 1, 2, 3, 4, maybe 5 different people who at one point or another I had promoted or, you know, were in ads in the videos turned out to be creeps, weirdos, or terrible human beings. And that, I guess, has been happening so much in the creator space where at one point you think you've got yourself an ally and then they turn out to be like, you know, Andrew Callahan or something like that, right? Or Channel 5 or Vosh or whatever. That I stopped just saying, hey, if you're smaller or whatever, I'll promote you. But there, when I first got into streaming and YouTubing, I agree with you. That was actually a really beautiful thing. That was something that I kind of loved about the online left before, you know, a lot of the world changed, was that everyone wanted to collaborate and read each other's quotes on videos and be in other videos. And you would see, you know, H-Bomb in ContraPoint's video and vice versa and stuff like that, right? I definitely don't feel like we have that as much anymore. I feel like that's really, you know, this honestly, your charity stream has been one of the biggest coming togethers or collaborations of content creators that I've seen in a really long time. That's beautiful and sad at the same time, you know, that it's kind of becoming that way.
Yeah. I mean, I hope at least in some small way that shifts from stuff like this, you know, my personal experience of talking to this many people. And I don't know what the audience experience is. If it's, I see a lot of people commenting saying they want to see a creator on here, and I understand why. And I also, but part of me is like, is this just a consumer celebrity event Coachella for BreadTube or whatever? And I have reservations about that. But I also know from talking to creators themselves, they're like, yeah, this is really cool and we should do this more. And yeah. And even just facilitating conversations between different creators, I think it's like there's value in it. But I also, you know, the obvious material value of a fundraiser is huge. But then the propagandistic value of this kind of collaboration, I wonder, like, I hope there's more there. And I think there could be. I haven't figured that out. That's for somebody else to figure out because I'm tired, man.
Well, yeah, you've also been doing this for how many days? And you're sleeping on stream, too.
Yes, I was for the first 3 or 4 nights. I was the last two. I've just been like, bye. And I think I'll probably do that tonight because I need to go outside and I can't leave the camera just pointed that way. That's maybe for the last night I'll bring it back. But I don't know, streaming. You guys are I bring it up to every streamer, but I'm like, you guys, it's it's a lot of work interacting with chat and talking all day and being reading and focusing on stuff. It's like, as much as Hassan and people get shit on for talking about how concentration is hard, it's just like, streaming specifically, it's like, this is intense, you know, it's a lot. So I admire what you guys do, and I hope everybody can keep doing it and keep crushing it. And it's so cool to hear about the election. I hadn't heard about that, and I hope more people follow in those footsteps. Did you do a video on that?
I did, yeah. Yeah.
Cool. Chat.
I'll well, drop for the channel. For the streaming thing, yeah, I don't do what Hassan does, though. He does it for like 8 or 10 hours a day. I don't have the batteries for that. Able to do that. I've done charity streams like you're doing right now, and they literally suck the life force out of you, because by day two or three of just waking up and being like, yeah, no, I need to sit in a room and have 1,000 people look at me, which is a weird idea, but that's happening.
Yeah. Strange stuff. Yeah. What else is going on in Vancouver right now?
I mean, we just finished a federal election. I don't know if y'all were following that. Canada didn't go right wing. We stick with the libs. We're sticking liberal
here. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
That took place not too long ago. Outside of that, I've been like, you're somebody who's going to be staying in the United States, right? Like, you're not doing the, I'm going to move somewhere else because things are getting too wild.
No. Yeah, I'm here.
Well, you grew up in Vancouver for a little while, didn't you? Or
I went to college in Vancouver for a year. I went to SFU. So Burnaby, I guess. But yeah, I grew up in Seattle. So close.
Yeah. I've been discussing with a lot of other content creators, especially people in, you know, marginalized communities, the idea of leaving the US, or some people are even thinking of leaving Canada right now, out of fear for what's taking place. Because there's, you know, people who live in Alberta, for example, they've passed some of the most intense anti-LGBTQ+ laws of anywhere in North America, and outside of maybe some pretty extreme red states. And now I'm getting to that point where I'm having to try and help people either immigrate to Canada through LGBTQ+ channels, which is something you can do, but there's a long wait. So just heads up if you're doing that, keep that in mind. But yeah, I was kind of wondering what your thoughts were on that, on the flight or fight domestically thing.
Yeah, I think for me, it's I'm the last person that is in need of considering that. I think I'm not sure though, broad strokes, what that looks like, because the attacks are obviously relentless and they're coming from all angles and at all levels of the population. Even if you're thinking of, you know, leaving, it might be they might get you and deport you to, you know, before you do that, for whatever, you know, reason, whether that's like political advocacy or just they're doing crazy shit with immigration. But yeah, I don't know. I haven't spent that much time looking into that. But yeah, I hope, I hope if people are wanting to do that, they're able to find the channels to do that. But yeah, for me, I've always been like, I hear that sentiment a lot from like white liberal upper middle class women, and I'm like, yeah, that's not really, I don't think it's gonna be a thing for you. And I think when, you know, what was it like, we've studied fascism, fascism scholars, which is why we're leaving the US, I'm like, okay, I mean, okay, like, I really don't think you're the target audience of this, and this feels more like a lib, you know, crazy lib party of Trump bad in a lot of ways. But at the same time, I know shit's bad. So I don't know. I don't know what to make of it. I mean, in those conversations, what have you gleaned, I guess, from that process?
There's a big fear, I think, amongst a lot of people, especially queer content creators, that, and I agree with this, that there's a McCarthyism going on right now, more so in the US and Canada, for sure. But I think that it's getting to a point now where, you know, it's it starts with a, you know, popular streamer like Hassan getting deported or detained at the airport. And then there's that TikToker, I think his name's like Guy Christensen or something, but he's being investigated by the Department of Justice now for his pro-Palestinian messaging. I agree with you totally that if you're like myself, if you're in a position of pretty comfortable privilege, then fighting is probably where you should ground yourself. That's my take. But also, I don't want to take anything away because I don't think anyone is useful to anyone else if they're in a prison cell or are consistently worried about simply leaving their house. You know, I also want people to have the resources they need. If you happen to be, you know, trans and you're in a deep red state, that it's going to be better for everybody if you can somehow, you know, get out to a sanctuary state to be able to, you know, better handle all this. But yeah, I agree with you. I think there is probably a very large amount of people who might be losing their minds, and you know, they've got like four homes and they're worried about being able to travel to their summer vacation house. And what if I get questioned at the border for an extra 20 minutes? That's not the same thing as, you know, people who are effectively getting deported for no crimes and sent to forced labor camps in El Salvador. That seems
slightly different. Yeah.
Seems like a worse scenario. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'd be scared to travel to the U.S. right now, personally, as a non-U.S. citizen, just because I feel, well, as a highly political non-U.S. citizen, I feel like, you know,
yeah.
it wouldn't take very long for them to use the old Googles and, you know, find out that I am not, in fact, a lover of the American empire. But
never too late to switch sides, though.
It's apparently where all the
leaving the
are.
Left so I can go to the Space Needle and check it out.
I don't know, I do worry for a lot of people in America who for one reason or another are being, because I think the big reason that you know, they came for the immigrants, or first they came for the students, whatever it is, I think the biggest reason that they are targeting people who speak up for Palestine is because this is something that's not that controversial amongst liberals either, right? If the right targeted people for an issue of which liberals took huge offense, you might see pushback and fighting, but I'm not really seeing a lot of fighting because there's always an excuse. It seems like, hey, he was a green card holder. That person, they supported a terrorist organization. That person, well, they broke glass, and so that's not good. You can't break glass. Glass helps keep sunlight penetrating into our homes. So, you know, that's the cardinal sin. But I think that the whole reason for all that is that who's really standing up for, you know, pro-Palestinian immigrants, a handful of Democrats, you know, are, but no one's even talking about Garcia anymore. That doesn't seem to be a topic. Like, that never got solved. He's, you know, and I know that's not related to him being Palestinian. That's 100% him being originally from El Salvador. But still, that's you know, Mahmoud Khalil is at least a piece of good news. But outside of that, like, a lot of these terrifying stories I'll read one day. The next day, I'm like, so, but that we're just gonna leave that dude.
Moving on, yeah.
Yeah, in a prison. Okay, I guess that's just where we're at now. He's in prison forever for having committed no crime, and him and a lot of other people are, and that's just reality now. So,
dark times. What's given you positivity? What's given you hope right now? Sort of a last question.
The kids.
I heard that answer a couple times on this stream. The kids are all right.
I read every day about how Gen Z are secretly Nazis and the whole generation's lost or all this kind of shit. I went to the student protests at the University of British Columbia, and I went a couple times to deliver them food and check out what the installation was there, and interview a bunch of them and talk to them. And I, when I was in college, did not have a brain like that. I can tell you this. I was concerned more with drugs and hooking up. Could be a different time, you know, but I was not anywhere near that eloquent and that determined. And that was truly something beautiful to see, because every single one of the students who was there was speaking in a way that I wish I was capable of, you know, manifesting on the go, where there wasn't a question I could ask them, or even other people, because there was other people interviewing them there too. There was one person who was clearly trying to get a gotcha or get them to say, like, so you, that's why you love Hamas, right? Or something like that. And just, you know, a media training at a level that I'll never truly know, because everything was just consistently like, we're going to bring it back and we're going to talk about what's important and we're going to bring the issue at hand. The kids are all right. But hey, I'll put asterisks. That's not enough. That doesn't mean that the kids are our saviors. We don't get to be boomers and just sit back and watch the world burn and be like, y'all, we'll fix it. You get old kids with your words and your TikToks. They are all right. So there's that.
Well said, man. I appreciate you talking about me so positively as a Gen Z kid, as a part of that group of people that are all right. That's very nice of you to say. So
y'all are doing okay.
Just kidding.
From a millennial to a child, it's good work you're doing.
Are you gonna skip to the hottest sauce?
I guess I have to.
Chip and sauce.
Right.
If you can, if you're not going to blow up.
I don't want to ruin your next guest's time slots. So I will preface by saying, I think by Scoville, this is hotter than Da Bomb, which is the worst hot sauce I've ever had in my life. I hate Da Bomb. When I bought this, the guy said I was too white to purchase it. I'm not making it up. He was like, you're too white for that, man. And then I was like, oh, I do those. But I absolutely hate this hot sauce. I will say that. But for every single person who's, yes. I don't know. I think it's delicious flavor-wise.
It's hot.
It's too much for me. I can't handle this one, but.
Claps in the chat. Spicy's in the chat. Bombs in the chat. Oh no. Do you have some milk? Is Sean Evans there to help you through this process?
Can you see me sweating already?
Yeah, literally I can. Your skin's looking great, but also I do see it getting worse. Oh no. Oh no. W Taste Buds in the chat. W debasement, streamer debasement.
What's the rule again? It's like 1 minute before you're allowed to have the soy.
Is that what they say?
I feel my cheeks are rosy now. I've actually, I can see there's like a single bead.
Already.
Well, amazing. To you, good sir. Thank you for all your incredible work and for fundraising so much money for a very important cause.
Yeah, man. Thank you for coming on. I appreciate it. I don't know how much we raised while you were here, but I think it's at least a couple thousand. So that's awesome. And appreciate your insight on all this stuff. And good luck with the content.
You as well, sir.